everyone, welcome to The Break Room, a podcast brought to you by Ashgate Hospice and me, your host, Kirsty Cashmore. For those who don't know me, that's okay. You usually hear me before you see me anyway, but I'm the Learning and Development Manager here at the Hospice. In each episode, we'll be talking to one of our amazing staff members or volunteers to learn more about the brilliant team we have here at Ashgate Hospice and the people behind the role. In this episode, I'll be chatting to Dawn Longdon-Whiting, our Council and Development Manager, who works as part of our supportive care service. So, hi Dawn.
Hiya.
How are you? Enjoying this not so sunny weather?
Yeah, it's a bit comic, it's wind up, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. So, thanks for joining us today. To get us started then, what can you tell us about your role at the hospice?
Okay, so I've been here at the hospice now for almost 3 years. My role is managing our team of volunteer ambulance and counsellors. We work Mondays to Fridays from 9 a.m. to 5, but we also do Wednesday evening sessions for people who work. Our counsellors are all either placements or with us from the local colleges or universities. They have to get 100 hours training, or they are the volunteers who work placements with us and have stayed on.
Oh, wow. So that's a testament to you and your service then, isn't it? That they stay on after they've completed their qualification.
Yeah, it's nice that they want to stay.
So what sort of got you into counselling or mental health? What's been your journey into it?
Goodness, it's a long journey. A long time ago it started. I think it started firstly in my dance studio with children as young as 9 bringing their bottles of Prozac and wanting me to remind them to take it at 4:30. We are talking a long time ago. And also, I guess, you know, parents used to come and have a chat in the office about what was going on in their lives. And it occurred to me I probably needed to find out a bit more about it.
Yeah.
So I went into counselling and psychology.
Wow. So you'd not already planned to do that then? Because you mentioned dancing then, you mentioned a dance school, which we'll come back to in a minute.
No plans whatsoever. I was a nurse to start with, orthopaedic nurse, for a year or so, and then I went back to dance.
So what is it about your role or this role that you enjoy the most then?
Having worked in mental health for 20 years or so, I work with mental health service users, and for the majority of my career in mental health, I was a regional manager for 2 mental health organisations, so I travel the country. And I think one of the things I really like about being here, apart from how lovely everybody is and how everybody gets on, is it's 10 minutes from home.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can, if somebody rings and says, can you just, I can actually say, yes, I can. And it makes a big difference.
It does, especially that work-life balance as well, I'd imagine.
Yes.
So it sounds quite heavy then, I'd imagine, some of the conversations that you might have to have. What do you do to unwind? I'm guessing dancing's a picture.
Yes. It can be heavy, and it can be heartbreaking, really, isn't it? Stories. I think, yes, I do unwind. I go to the dance studio. I see the children. We do what we do. We get ready for competitions or exams, or you know, they have cake or whatever they're into that night, you know. Total chaos, but they're good. And as I say, I've always done it from being 2 years old. It's just part of life, but it's a good opposite to mental health.
Yes. And was dancing something you always wanted to do then? So from doing it from 2 years old, did you want to pursue it professionally? Or what got you in, or what led you to buy a dance school or run a dance school?
Okay. I, as any other child at 2 does, mum takes you along to dance class, don't they? Because you're a little girl. She's in red ballet shoes and a royal blue leotard, as I recall.
Oh, wow.
And a dance teacher who always had red fingernails, hence I tend to have red fingernails quite a lot because that's what the little ones remember.
Yeah.
They're holding your hand. That's all they see of you, your hands. And that's what I remember from being 2, 2.5. I think for me, it became a bit more of a, I always did want to do it, but from being 4 to being 6, I had Perthes, which meant I was in a wheelchair. And so the goal was, when you can walk again, you can dance again. And so rather than physiotherapy, I went back to dance.
Wow.
And I just loved it. And then from being 13 again, I was back in Harlow Wood, which was an orthopaedic hospital, and back in a wheelchair. So again, the carrot the physio used was, well, if you don't do this, not going to dance, are you? And she won every time because I was going back to dance.
Dangling those pesky carrots in front of you.
Yeah. And at that point, I guess from being 14, 15, there was no way I could perform because we didn't know how good my legs were going to be. So I then started helping out teaching at my dance teacher's studio. And from there, by the time I was 19, having done a year at Harlow Wood as a nurse and having been to ballet school, my dad gave in and said, OK, you tried a proper job, you can now be a dance teacher. I got my qualifications at 18. It's one of the only, I think, one of the only professions that, you know, you can have got your life membership in something before you get to 60 because you start so young.
Yeah.
Which is quite scary, really. And that's what I did. So my dad had a spare floor in his factory and turned it into a dance studio.
That's incredible. From the ripe old age of 19, owning your own dance school. And I love the reference to a proper job there as well. So I'm guessing it wasn't always your parents' dream for you to own your own dance school.
No. I think my mum was a nurse, my father was an engineer. So it was very much a educational thing. But I think because they allowed me to do that so young, by the time I was 26, I was bored.
Yeah.
And I needed to do something else, which is where the degree in psychology and counselling came in, and then into being a member of BSDP counselling that led into my child work.
Well, that's fascinating, especially because I've noticed the link that you mentioned between being in orthopaedic hospital and then you being an orthopaedic nurse as well. So is that, I'm guessing there was a link. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I suppose it was about giving it back. They helped me to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give something back. So I did a year's training there. At the time, I thought that's what I wanted to be. But unfortunately, I had a bit of an accident with my neck. And then I couldn't lift anymore. And in orthopedics, it's an awful lot of lifting.
Mm.
And it was back to physio again. So that meant back to more dance. Dance teacher who was more than happy for me to go back in and do what I was doing before. I work a bit harder to make sure I have my qualifications by my 18th birthday.
That's mad. And you've shown a hell of a lot of resilience from the tender old age of 4 years old as well, going through all that on that journey. That's really inspirational, Dawn.
For me, it's normal. Because obviously I don't know.
Any different. It's kind of like gone full circle as well, hasn't it? So, you know, you were a dance teacher, your dance school, and your students and the student parents inspired you to become a counsellor and get qualification in mental health and psychology. And then, how does your work then link back into dancing? Or does it not?
It doesn't as much anymore. Obviously, my postgraduate was in counselling children and adolescents. So that's really useful when working with children.
Yeah.
But on the whole, it's skills. You know, just coming back round, it isn't as much. And I do tend to keep the two very separate.
Yes.
So when I finish here at 4:30, I go in there for 5 o'clock. And occasionally, you know, parents will say, can't we do earlier? I'm like, no, where do you work on counselling manager? I should be asked. Because obviously in Chesterfield, that just stops everyone dead in their tracks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You work out. Yeah, I do. That's my other life, and that's what I'm up to very much.
Yeah. Do you ever get any time to rest? So finishing here at 4:30, go and dance until 5, till when? 8:30, 9?
No, we do think the children aren't old enough yet, I don't feel. The eldest are coming up 14. Okay. So we finish at 7:30 at the moment, so they go home to do their homework. However, by September, you know, they are going to be 14, coming up 15.
Yeah.
So we'll extend the days. So rest is on a Sunday if we haven't got dance competition or exams. Other than that, it just keeps me busy.
I can imagine. I'm surprised you don't have to have like 4 million holidays a year just to relax. I've got a holiday coming up. I'm very ready to relax and I'm not half as busy as you are. So what's your morning routine like before you start work then? So we've talked about your after-work routine.
Okay.
What's that morning one like?
Like everybody else, I guess. You know, I get up, I read the news bulletins, take a shower, get ready. I work from 9 till 10. I do all my emails and paperwork from day 4 if there's anything. And then we're ready to do assessments or meet with counsellors or any other meetings that come up during the day.
I love that discipline you've got from 9 till 10. I do my emails and, you know, you look at your paperwork. I wish I had that discipline because typically I try and go straight into something. And, yeah, where's that discipline come from?
Dance.
Yeah.
Very much. I think it also comes with working in mental health. In mental health, I used to do it at the other end of the day because I've not been out all day. So I probably left home at 7:30, driven to wherever I was working, which could have been anywhere in the country. So I couldn't do that. It was still making sure everything was finished. I don't like, they talk about empty desks, don't they? Mine truly is an empty desk. There is nothing left over from today. I will take into tomorrow.
Wow.
Tomorrow's a new day.
Is there some sort of training that you can use to coach people on how to do that? So what's one skill you've developed outside of work that has unexpectedly helped you in your career? So discipline is a skill, or is it a behavioural trait? I'm not quite sure, but are there any others?
Patience.
Yeah.
I think. Certainly dance school.
Patience.
I'm fine with children. I'm less patient with adults. So, because I expect them to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I don't teach adult classes because they can't do it. Two-year-olds can't, adults can't. So I'm very impatient. Other members of my staff team do that. Here, again, I think it's patience because here, very much like in the NHS, wheels tend to go turn slowly. So it's about that patience to wait, whereas I'm very much I've got that to do. Okay, I've got, so for example, I've got all these assessment calls to make to book in. Now, I could take a week to do it, but no, they've been done today. So tomorrow, they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so patience.
And again, it's a discipline to have that patience, I suppose, isn't it? So, yeah. And you've just mentioned not doing adult classes or you not teaching them, but does your dance school do adult classes?
We don't at the moment, no. We used to. Very often it's my old girls who talk me into it because they want to come back.
Yeah.
You know, we would be here and with all the work we have on with the children, it's just not happening at the moment.
Well, do let me know when it does. And I'm sure anybody else in Ashgate would love to know as well, because I used to dance when I was younger.
Thank you.
Yes, loved it. Did ballet, tap, modern, all of that. So competitions and whatnot. And I'd love to get back into it. So, yes, what is the name of your dance school, by the way?
Just Dances.
Just Dancing Studios. And it's Chesterfield based.
We are. We're based just behind Riverside.
Excellent. Yes, I'll keep tabs out on bulletins for any adult classes. The first request is now.
We've got a while to wait.
Got a while to wait yet then. It's okay, I'll start warming up and stretching the limbs. Have you got any funny or memorable moments in starting with Ashgate?
I wouldn't say it's funny, no. It's just enjoyable.
Yeah. What makes it enjoyable?
Just the whole feeling of the place. You know, you don't go anywhere where you think, oh, I don't want to be in there, or not sure about that. So I think it's just everybody is always friendly. You know, like today, even in the cafe, you know, everybody's saying hi and we're all chatting. And people that you don't see for weeks. It's just nice.
It's a special place, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel the same, especially when I've been working at home for a couple of days as well, being able to hybrid work. Sometimes you need that fix. Sometimes you just need to come on site and experience it and see everybody.
I think the humbling experience of yesterday, I just had a walk through the ward to remember why I'm here and what I'm doing. Not necessarily for those patients on the ward, but for their families.
Yeah. Oh, that's really touching, man. Yeah.
Thank you.
But it's so prevalent, though, and I think it was all good to sometimes remember why we're here and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
If you could give give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be? I love your chuckle.
Question. Not to worry about stuff, I think. It will all turn out in the end.
Mm.
To remember to put everything back in its box in your head and let it go at the end of the day and don't go home and worry about it, because life has a way of sorting things out.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that would be it. Don't worry about what the future's going to hold, because the future's going to just come no matter what.
Yeah. Don't worry about what you can't control. It's something similar my mum says to me, that.
Yeah. And as a young dance teacher at 18, it was a pretty scary place.
Yeah.
As I said to one of my dance teacher friends the other day, who we started our schools together, more or less. We've been at it a long time. Yeah, we were sort of saying, we were talking about it and how scary the dance teachers were in those years. I went, practically, you know what? We are those dance teachers now. We are the people that the young teachers look at and think, oh, I want to be like them, or I don't want to be like them because they're really scary. Their reputation for sweet. And mine's an adjudicator does precede me. You know, so it's about making it a better place for them so they don't feel as scared as we used to.
Yeah. Being that role model for somebody is, yeah, and that inspiration someone to look up to is so important. And it's true, I think, in any organisation as well. I think one thing we talk about when we run the What It Means to Be a Manager workshop is that, you know, some people or some managers in that scenario teach you what sort of manager to be, and others teach you what sort of manager not to be. It's all based on influence.
It's, yeah, and I actually think for many people, it's some people just do it naturally.
Mm.
I was lucky. From being very small, my mum used to say after we'd done a show when I was little, it would be, why are you always the one on stage getting everybody organised? So I guess for some people, management is much easier than others. Mm. If you can help the others who are struggling,
mm-hmm.
That's good to do.
Yeah, definitely. We've talked about what piece of advice you'd give to your younger self. What piece of advice would you give to yourself back on your first day at Ashgate, knowing what you know now?
Wow, there's a question. Think back 3 years.
Now, we started at the same time, I think, as well, didn't we? We were pretty late at the beginning of July.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were on the same Welcome to Ashgate workshop, I remember.
Again, it's don't worry about it.
Mm.
You know, don't get in a panic. It was a new world. I was working back in Derbyshire for the first time in, gosh, 5-6 years, and I hadn't worked in Chesterfield for a very long time. So I think a bit of it was anticipatory. What's it going to be like? I might know people, because I always worked where I didn't know people.
Yeah.
Not that it mattered, but it's a different boundary, different rule. Surprisingly, I think there's only one person, maybe two, that I've met working here that I know from somewhere else.
Yeah. And how was that for you? Was it as scary as you thought it might be? Scary might not be the right word, but...
No, I think I had decided when I applied for the job that I wanted to come back to Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm honest, I wanted a bit more of an easy life. I was tired of driving 800 miles a week, living in hotels. I think COVID finished the hotel life off because I was tired of it all. So I was excited to start here, but yeah, there's always that, not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, bit of apprehension.
Yeah, but yeah, that was it really.
Is there any particular mantra or quote that you live by?
Not one regarding this, no.
Oh.
Our motto that we use at dance studio is to live is to dance, and to dance to live.
Ooh, ooh.
What I've lived by, other than that, for many years, is an anonymous poem called Don't Quit.
Okay.
And I've got it with me here because everything's downstairs. But it's when things... it's called Don't Quit. My grandma used to have it up in her house. And, yeah, I've always used that.
It's anonymous. You won't have an author.
I have no idea who the author is, but it starts off when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, in the path you're trudging, it's all up.
Oh, I love that already. That's it. That's your permission. Everybody go on Google this poem, anonymous poem, don't quit. And if it starts with those, with that sentence or that paragraph, then you have found the right one. Oh, I'm just going to look at that now. Have you got a guilty pleasure or a quirky habit?
No, I don't think I have quirky habits. I try not to have habits.
Okay. Why is that? Do you see habits as bad things, or?
I don't think I see them as bad things. I think sometimes I find them annoying, so I find not to have them. Very often, kids and dads are doing things, and I'm like, will you stop it, man?
I love how open and just direct you up. Just like, habits are annoying.
Yeah.
Tell us about your department then. What makes counselling different from other parts of Ashgate?
I think the thing that makes counselling different is that the nurses obviously work, many of them are in the Royal College of Nursing, and it's standardised, whereas in counselling we work within the BACP guidelines, and sometimes that can come across differently to how we work here at Ashgate. So we have a lot of boundaries. There are things we can't do. So, for example, we can't always put notes onto System 1 because it's where other team members or other professional organisations can see what's written.
Absolutely.
And because of our confidentiality rules and the boundaries within that we work within, we can't always do that.
Okay.
So I think it does tend to keep you apart from a lot of what we do because... With all goodwill in the world, we want to be a part of everything that goes on at Ashgate, but you can't because you, as counsellors, we know a lot about people that, especially if any staff members come, you know, that we can't disclose because of this confidentiality issue. As counsellors, we're trained to leave it in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do a session, 50-minute session, and when that person leaves, the write-up on those, and it's done.
Yeah.
Until the next session.
Yeah.
And it's about having that ability to leave it in the room and not carry it with you. So I think we touched earlier about when I said I took a walk on the ward.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, about that, having the ability to shut it down, leave it in the room, but also knowing that that's why we still do it.
Yeah.
And so it's about being there. And sometimes it's about being there but not being there.
Yeah.
So for me, it can sometimes feel quite solitary
mm-hmm.
because, you know, people say, oh, well, I don't know what you do or where you're from. And it's like, well, I'm the counselling manager. But it's about having to take that step back and not getting involved in everything.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy for people to say, oh, well, you know, my mum came to counselling and I can't say, oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not allowed to say that.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm sure so-and-so came to council. It's like, oh, did they?
Yeah.
So it's about not getting involved in those conversations.
That just feels quite solitary, actually. Did it take a certain personality, do you think, to be a counsellor? I mean, by my own admission, I think I'd be rubbish because I'm such an open book. I wouldn't know what to say and what not to say. I'd be too scared of saying the wrong thing. But, yeah, what sort of traits make a good counsellor?
So you have to be able to listen, you have to be able to empathise, mm-hmm. you have to have compassion. A lot of those are traits that can be taught. Some people are, again, like managers, naturally good managers. Others become good counsellors through training, like managers become good managers through training.
Yeah.
And through role models. I know with a lot of the younger or the newer counsellors, yeah, it is a lot about... afterwards having almost like a debriefing session with them, are you okay? Can you cope with this? If you need anything, give me a call. And sometimes it is reminding them that when they walk out of that room and close that door, that's it, it's done.
Yeah.
Don't take it home with you because I'm so mad.
Yeah, and like I say, when we spoke earlier about it, it can potentially be quite heavy, I'd imagine. It's carrying that additional load, isn't it? Yeah.
Let's make sure you seek out your supervision, your supervisors, and use it to put...
Yeah. Well, that's why they're there, isn't it? That's why you have that support. So with you feeling like it's a bit of a solitary role, do you still see the impact that you make? Do you still feel that you make an impact and your role within one Ashgate?
Yes, I do. Last year we did 1,041 sessions.
Wow.
And I did 180 something assessments.
Wow.
So yes, you can see that impact
in
the figures. You can see the impact from the people who come back to say thank you, or the good things that they write on the feedback forms. So yeah, you can see it. And we can celebrate it as the rest of Ashgate indeed do.
Yeah.
But there's just something about that. Don't get us too involved, because it can't be
the
roles we have. And again, because of this membership that we have, it binds us.
I never thought I'd be able to like draw comparisons between dancing and counselling, but you know, there's a lot of the behaviours and a lot of the mindset are actually the same, aren't they? So discipline, setting boundaries, you know, the commitment to it. It's quite fascinating, actually.
It is very similar, as you say, in the boundaries, in the discipline, in the almost in dance. We interpret the compassion and the empathy and stuff within the music.
Yeah.
Whereas in counselling, we do it verbally.
Yeah.
And within, you know, the one-to-one sessions, be they on the telephone, on Teams, or in person.
Right, well, absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
It's been lovely to find out more about you as well, because I know we passed each other in the corridor, we'll have the chat in the cafe, wrote me and say, hi, how are you? But to actually spend time with you and learn a bit more about you, I've really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to be a guest or know of a fellow staff member or volunteer who would, please get in touch with Sophie Goodwin, Internal Communications Officer. You've been listening to the Breakroom podcast by Ashgate Hospice. I've been your host, Kirsty. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you again next time.